people would stand on their hands and say, spend something for nothing, yeah. Yeah, I will as well. But anyway, I'm going to read poems from my new book, which is coming out in January, on the myth of Ankalasvera, the Hag of Vera, and I think there are some people here who are probably so sick of hearing me read these poems. I think Billy anyway has heard them a few times, but is there anyone here who doesn't know of the myth of the Hag of Vera? So I'm from the Vera Peninsula, as Paul says, and there's a rock down there in Ballycrovan Harbour, just looking out over the sea and a few fields, and it's supposed to be the petrified remains of this woman, the Hag of Vera. And she's supposed to live several lifetimes. At the beginning of each lifetime, she turns from stone into a woman, and then at the end, from a woman back into stone. And there's a few stories. I grew up listening to lots of different stories about her. There were the pre-Christian stories, and then the kind of Christian and post-Christian stories, which kind of saw her as a hag figure, whereas the pre-Christian stories thought of her as kind of a goddess of the earth, that she carried stones in her apron and dropped them along the coast and they made the mountains, that she fell in love with the god of the sea, and they were married. And I was really, really drawn to the pre-Christian stories in particular, and I thought that they were so moving and just really stories about human nature and relationships. And one of the stories in particular that I was drawn to was this love story between the Hag of Vera and the god of the sea. But I thought, there aren't many gods of the sea left around Vera, so I really just created a narrative about a Vera woman who falls in love with a fisherman, and still keeping that image of the stone and the woman turning from stone into a woman, because I just thought that was such a moving image. So this book is just essentially these stories in the Hag's, or the Caliph's, voice. And the first poem I'm going to read is just a piece of narrative. It's almost like her introducing herself. And one of the things I wanted to keep alive in the poems was our oral tradition, and just the idea of storytelling. So this is just essentially a woman looking back over her life and telling the story. So she says, "I will begin again with the story, though I fear I am drawing out a thing unfinished, moving still in half light. My pleasures I remember, the ones that remained and enfold me, like my unborn in shoals of life, the unwearied smiles of those dreams. I raise the haunting things, shadowed impresses of the earth. They are the resin of people I once touched, lingering between my vision now and my vision then. But I must resist the old distractions. Age continues with its backward glances, with all its ghosts, and one layer of stone settles on another." This is called Scent, and there were quite a few stories about this kind of hag or crone figure appearing to warriors in Celtic mythology and tempting them, and if they slept with her as a hag, they would become rulers of Ireland and become kings, and then she would change into a beautiful woman, so they got very lucky. So this is one night that she spent with a king or a warrior. Then, "I have touched these chambers before," my body says, "when I lie in the bed of a king, watching his indigo riches drift to the floor. His heart flutters like a moth against glass, are those dancers coupled along the halls of his castle. He's never sure what to hold or whisper, my body inching like a fox, breath swaying like two pale moons over his quilted bed, where I've often left flowers, daisies, dandelions, and honeysuckle for his pillow, the threads of which still show the hollow maze of his cheek. Still it is night outside, still his jewels hand on my back, while I unfasten my hair in the hours when everything is seated down with darkness. I lay my fingers to the fever on his chest and curl my prince there, ridge and glen. His scent like burning flesh softens into my skin. I crawl to him, calm fierceness over the pillows and roses, flags of blood marking my tread across his legs where I kiss and break open until he starts to moan, grass sweet drippings of his mouth, as though he's making me a gift in the quiet before each breath, guiding my tongue back along the path none but another animal would follow. This is called The Start, and it tells the story about how this standing stone, that famous, who's from Bear Island, known very well, there's a standing stone on the top of Bear Island, and the story goes that the on Calavera stood on the top of one of the mountains on the mainland, Mishkish, and another kind of hag figure, very powerful, you know, goddess figure, stood on the top of Bear Island, and they had some fight. They started flinging rocks back and forth to each other, and the standing stone that's on the top of Bear Island is supposed to be the stone that kills the other hag figure. So it's called Sister. It wasn't my calf she killed, screamed its absence, but the green viciousness in her eyes, exploding like water over coals as she tasted the blood. No sooner she slaughtered than she ran, smiling, and I after her off the soft slope, my skirt chiming against the grass. Sister bitch. She was always a cocky thing, but slow. Honestly, I preferred her dead, her black teeth chilling in the mud like an afterbirth. So we planned a war for morning, after breakfast. When the houses began to yawn their shadows, I dressed warmly, climbed the mountain and piled rocks by my ankles. Size, weight, and number, a stone for her size. Hissing, she stood on an opposite hill, flinging her stones, missing me one by one. The sun couldn't throw such fires. I hit back at her catcalls, her blood, her startled face as her slim feet began to stumble on the ledge. Every rock I threw tunneled through the air and drowned her ears with their dullness. I charmed her tongue to such sweetness then. She cried reason, so I reasoned with that, seeing her look down where the grey rocks open like the rageless mouths of roots. I admit she held her fists until the end, her arms spinning and spinning in the wind gloom. Just as she staggered to the edge, I readied my smile and flung my last. A breath, a clear breath, sister, to help when your balance snaps. This is called The Watcher and the First Sight, and it's about the first time she sees the man that she falls in love with, the fisherman. Between the water sharded stones and the whispering banks, I knelt watching you, my body like a dark sun over the groping roots. I knew the river by a tug of marsh, the myriad eyes of frog spawn floating softly in their soapiness. I knelt there, watching you, your legs and waist disappearing in the stream as though you were half woven from water, lifting your neck like a creature with its scales when the sun comes sifting down. I have never so much trespass, I thought, as you bent into the crushing water, the taut coolness of your skin shining with the crystal salt. I didn't want a glance or a sound, only the sight of you, the mouthing space, the absence of language, only to watch you turn to the shimmering coils of light, the river rising around me, describing to me the dark that would be cast over the body. Violent, liquid, soft. The darkness that would be cast between the moment when I could destroy and the moment when I would devour. afternoon I look up from my work and see you standing at my gate, hands paused on the rusty bolt like a gannet waiting to plunge. Under your arm you balance a box of fish, radiant mackerel, the shocked stare of pollock. The smell of fish is fading like a scar silvering on your skin, and you step towards me, let the box down gently onto the grass. My eyes and ears follow your footfall across the path where you come to sit beside me. I hold the gaze to the plentiful tails, curved and leaning out of the box, the pure cry, the throwing off of flesh, and the scent of you I take in, the long and calm breath gathered for the sweetness after the feast is done. And I actually wrote this when we had been living together for about a year, but we bought a house together up in North Cork, and like I freak out when there's things to be done, like, so he made about a million trips from Cork City up to the house with all the stuff, and I went to stay with my parents for a week and just kind of let them at it. So this poem I wrote kind of about preparing a space for somebody, but it's kind of, because a lot of these love poems are drawn from my own relationship, but this one is just completely like a fiction. So it's because it's about preparing a space for somebody. Promise. The grey sound of rain on the roof, sound and light splitting on my skin like flint pieces working me. I am preparing a place for you, cleaning down the walls and worktops, making space in the wide room, in the small room, doubling things needed. Roses I found growing around the bridge I lay on your pillow. So time and love go round like dancers. In time I won't be able to tell your name from mine, to separate your voice from my voice within this house. My love, I am at the table waiting. When you come home, my hands shake like rain breaking on the knotted waves. You think I really did it, like? I am drowning in your dark cast mouthing. My lips won't join. My hair falls like silk feathers against my back. My legs are collapsed and glinting silver, like mackerel tails in moonlight. Water descends the walls of my house and blooms the smell of stone, pouring out anything calm. We are both trembling on the floor. I touch out words with my tongue. I adore your body, I adore your mass. But what remains when these things quiver? Is there no safe and knowable place? All those gems you have set your heart to, your nest, your song, your skin, all will shatter if you start. This is called Children of the Kleenex, and a Kleenex is a burial place for children who died before they were baptized, and there are quite a few of them down. I haven't seen them anywhere else, but there are quite a few of them down in Barra in West Cork, and they're just so moving to go and see, because they're just these tiny little graves just marked with slabs of stone, just no indication otherwise that there are bodies there. And I heard Terry Ryan a few years ago when they were kind of debating the existence of limbo, because that was where that you were told that these souls were gone when they weren't baptized, and suddenly the Pope was kind of saying, oh, we're not sure actually if it exists, and these mothers were ringing up Terry Ryan saying just devastated, because they really believed that the souls of their children had gone to limbo, and they were saying, where are they now, like, where is my child? You know, it was very, very eerie and sad at the same time to listen to. So this is called Children of the Kleenex, and it's in the voice of one of the children. Come to us with lilies and meadow sweet. Come to us by heart and not by sight. That heaving of love which aches still, coffins in your belly, darkening loam. Mother, I've known your waist and the length of your soft hands bent over this rugged, unworked soil. I've known you by the forgetful daisies strung with blue and red twine. I open my eyes. You are watching me. If ever I am allowed a voice, you will know me when I speak. If I was unwinged in nothingness, I would bring home to you a memory of wings. The sighs which undercut life I remember, and above, a chorus of birds, the petals of daisies lifting. Hear me. I will know you again among the crickets and billowing trees. We will survive the earth. Are you not my mother? Was it not you I heard in the thrashing dark? The one whose hands I felt unbury me and baptize my soul in a fountaining of tears. And this is called Rumour, and this is back in the voice of the Collapse. Once I was rumoured to have killed a man, a lover of mine, to forgive money he stole. The voices rolled through greedy mass down the village, disturbing my thoughts. I wore black, I bowed, I learned to speak with looks instead of words. Nevertheless, I wasn't fearful. I felt his absence, tight like a bandage around my mouth, and wore it out. Even now I think of him. Pick of the bunch, my pucker face healed. He kept coming to my gate, looking at me with a feverish pallor. It was his hands that wooed me. Those boot-soled palms, large and warm, clambering around my waist. But what of his eyes, close as hairs, grooved above his full white cheeks, or his lips, those two hot wires that entered my mouth, sliding shut sometimes on a secret. Such sweetheart shrieks I remember, and what I miss, his infinite jaws, glassy teeth bleeding their life, his smile. The rumours didn't end, became gestures like branches nodding. I walked the village, wearing my new clothes, quietly, my arms swinging. This is called Lost, and this is about the night that her husband is lost at sea. Having watched the flashing shoals all day, he went out in the late evening with the men. The mackerel and nets and the distant houses seemed to be made from silver or a grey steel under the moonless shroud of dark over the bay. I watched the silhouette of my love's head set like a heart in the follower boat. His back bent, as if he would leave them all out alone from the pier. I felt it before I heard it, pressed it to my skin, my lips, my eyes. It became as visible as the lighthouse light icing through the shadows. An hour before his boat went down, I ran my hand over his small bedside covers, followed the scream of his mournings around the room. It was as if the shell of his breathing that drew a shape in his pillow suddenly weakened, fell flat as a cheek in that nest. When the morning rose, I waited behind the kitchen window, watching the sea roll quiet. I thought of a blinding dawn and the world underneath. I thought of the foxgloves waiting in the meadows. I felt it before they told me, the cold, the tuneless shriek. Up from the darkened landing, the last few came, bearing their knives and lures, their hands pickled, bright as fish, rising slowly in the ebb tide. Rapture. I dreamed that when I turned from the strand, I saw a bird was shivering up on the hill, and the bush itself a moving calm. When I crawled beneath it, I found your hands trembling together, dusted gold with the fallen petals. I gathered them into my arms and kissed them, kissed away the bloom of mud from your palms, kissed and kissed wildly the needle wounds, the grooves of your knuckle buds, their cold light spreading like a scent in the lightning blistered twilight. Back on the shore I found your chest, dashed with shingle and knuckles of cold. Altogether I found your arms, feet, ribs, your face glistening like a jeweled heart among the limpets, and the gift of your lips brought to my face like a thought. When I had deeped you together you were still, and I lay with you, pressed the soft clay of my flesh into your hollows as if we were not separate. I did not move, like a barnacle to your side, love, until the tide turned its coast and the world unfastened me. The dancing room. When they called Melodian Jim to play, and I heard through the set of dancers was gathering the chord notes in the box, a riddled mounting to the tune path. The sound strikes against the frame of the room, and you take my hand gently into the gleaming middle of the music, the crossest of movements in lamplight. All night the bay foams in the rock pool, like a thousand fallen swan feathers, secretly as young girls arranging their hair, something seen in the backward glances. Our feet and bodies batter on the boards, an enunciation of language on skin, more breathless and luminous than the current of words lost upon the tongue. Those who came from the island bring the taste of salt and shingle on their lips, and hear the music as the net cast out. You and I hear it as a mirror hung over the sea, the petals of light falling on the crest of each small wave, falling everywhere and everywhere lost. The names of moths come clear to me now. Swallowtail, true lover's knot, white ermine marbled against the lamplight. When we first danced together you were poised perfectly, turning the steps and half-said words into my body's rhythm, quiet of things done. Again I follow you into your summer mood, holding the last echo of a beat within a beat. Here's my hand held out. Give me another. Her husband says, at the end of my life there was the twilight pleated between the clouds, and the memory of that evening I brought safely with me, when the sun, gold and silent, slid from the sky and beneath our room. I stood beside you, watching the rain at the window, your hands cupped to my chest. Outside the noiselessness of winter, the moon fleshing over the village and the leaves gathering on the roadside. I looked at you against the pane, still and glistening, as if I saw you through the whole of my life, our moist breath shrouding our faces together in the dark bending of the earth. I said that the leaves will come, deep green shadows rising over the frost after I am gone. I told you that you would stand here again after the first winter. You would call for me, and in my absence know how the quiet after grief comes slowly, like the quiet after love. Am I going on too long? I have no idea. This is called How Old. When my visitor asked me how old I was, I told him to count 1 year for each bald bone of a bullock he found in my house. Pressing a curse into the air, he hauled himself up to the attic and began tossing, counting bones into the downstairs room, murmuring beneath the clatter, the rattle, the brittle echo, the shock, toss, the heave, the pitch, the cast and catch, the cracking hurl. even told I was with my house a den of blood, lured with the salty scent of flesh. He looked for mass, for rain, for bloody limbs. For a day and a night and a day, I stayed in the downstairs room, sniffing and loving his dog, his disgust, and the pile of old fevers, death white now. When I first heard them, my thousand memories falling around me, I felt a flush like a birth pain, as if my body echoed what it heard, remembering my pleasures, my hungers. I turn in the early dark to remember. One night in this room, small ecstasy, fierce, shuddering, soldier of the skin, the flame when later I ask for more. I am filled with it, almost savoring his anger, hands shredded to the wrist, an armful of answers, guesses, squinted eyes, humming the number against his fingers. And down he comes with a bone for a tongue, rattling out his reasons and loathing, his neighbourly stories and boasting. I noticed his hands shake as he went for the door, the fear in the deep house of his face as he swore. I drove him out with numbers, the years within my mind, one of the anguish and adoring parts, one with a scent, the love notes high in my throat, one of a stone cradle gleaming with dew, the haunting thing. When I was a woman lying on my back by the whispering lakeside, and the ground around me was strewn with flowers. This is called The Wanderer, and there was kind of a tradition of stories about this woman who would appear to just people walking on their own in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night. So this is a poem about, based on one of those stories. The Wanderer. Would you walk with me, woman? The cold is in for the night now, and the mountains quiet. It's scarce the sun rolls round her face or walks out in the field. The cold is in. Would you walk with me, woman? The night makes a blaze of my grief, my only soft and finest love. Her long hair is flung out before me like moonlight on the sea. All the memory of her is me. Would you walk with me, woman? I have no talk of war or song. I have no ready ear to the earth or words in passion for their work. Sooner comes the dark ingrained on summit and the ocean louder. Would you walk with me, woman? One more road in a whirl of roads opens before me like a ritual of place. I remember the foreign lightness of her touch. I loved her soft and indecipherable look. The mountains are dark now. The cold is in. Would you walk with me, woman? I have just two more, and then I'm going to stop off the story. This is called Crow, and the crow and the cow are kind of symbols of her as well. They're kind of her animal side. Crow. I am calling you out, my first companion. My eyes to your eyes sees only the fluid dark, the landscape of your iris brilliant as a rose. I looked in, found two eyes, a face like my own, gathering its stone nest, the body forgetting the body, the voice driven finally out of the earth. Though it was only a nest of rags and one constant eye that raised you, I cherished the lightness there, an unmoved beauty, so that when the time came you would stand by the gentle lake, sipping and foraging. Your eyes would suddenly lighten with the swaying water, calm and useful. You would look down and know me. And the last poem is called The Return, where she turns back into stone. I walk through paw prints the frost has dug, among the moist grasses, my silver hair flowing like a cat's deep stretch. This is my season. Again and again I die under the blossom of leaves and count my life by the sapped rings of trees. No one will know me, none but the wood growth, its hug of fluff, its scent of musk, its naked shadow and eye, standing at the end of an embered wood, where once the light passed through me and passes again, before I remember how I appeared or how I ended, folding myself into my arms, the seed, the root, the blossom, the stone shining with all its running juices. Thank you very much.